Good evening, everyone. I will open the meeting with our opening statement. Council acknowledges that we meet on the traditional country of the Karamun and Noongar people. We pay our respects to ancestors and elders, past and present, as the custodians of this ancient and beautiful land. Together, we will care for this place for the generations to come. And in this context, the decisions we make can be guided by the principle that nothing we do should decrease our children's ability to live on this land. So we have two apologies tonight. The first is from Mayor Jan Burgesson, and the second is from Councillor Pauline Bill. Councillor Chief will be joining us family matters too. Does anyone have a request for a leave of absence? Okay, we'll move on to the minutes of the previous meeting. So we're looking at accepting the minutes from the 12th of November.
I have a material conflict of interest in relation to item 12.4. I intend to nominate or seek council's endorsement for that position. It carries with it a small board fee, and on that basis, it's a material conflict.
Thank you. Councillor Parkin.
Thank you. I will declare a perceived conflict of interest to the same item 12.4. I don't intend to nominate, but my father is the chair of the Dalton Care Management Board. There's going to be no conflict, but I just will refrain from the vote. Thanks.
Sure. That's a general conflict.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I have a perceived interest, so you see this, 12.5, the Water and Flood Management Authority that runs the council rep on that, and the Olympic Roads. The 12.1 and 12.2, I'm not sure if I might have an interest in the public.
Yeah, so we don't have the meeting anymore, so it needs to be a general meeting. Councillor Grant.
Yeah, thank you, Anthony Mayor. I wish to declare a general conflict of interest regarding item 12.2, which I'll speak to in the
Councillor
Daniel. Material conflict 12.1.
Any other? I will be declaring a general conflict of interest at items 12.2 and 19.1, and I will just upload them together. Okay, for planning members' opening remarks, I don't have any, so I will thank the members of the public and our speakers for coming along tonight. We will move on to item 7. We don't have any questions adjourned, and we don't have any questions lying on the table. Petitions, we don't have any. Deputations, we don't have any, but we do have a public forum for that. We allow time for members of our public to speak on any particular matter if they would like to. Have I got anyone that would like to speak in the public forum tonight? No. Okay. We'll move on. So we do have a presentation tonight from Regional Development Australia. Mr. Shoggy, would you like to come up to the chair in front of you there? Yes, people come to. So we've got 15 minutes. And then we have 5 minutes of questions at the end. So yes, just turn your mind on when you're ready to speak, and over to you.
Thank you very much. I'm Steve Shotton, I'm Executive Officer and Director of Regional Development at RDA Adelaide Hills Bureau of Engineering and Kangaroa. And I'd like to introduce David Ridley, our Economic Development Officer, who joined us in September. Wanted to make sure that you knew who he was, because he's on the ground a lot more than me these days. I'd like to acknowledge and respect the traditional custodians of this beautiful region which we live and work, the Kaurna, Paramount, Arundari, Ramaderi, and pay my respects to their elders past and present. So thanks for having us. We always appreciate this opportunity to present to you. And I'll talk briefly about our role, and I'll say briefly because I have presented to you before, but then dive into our project suite. So Regional Development Australia is an Australian government initiative spanning 50 regions across the country. And in this state, and we're lucky in that we're supported by all three levels of government. We don't take any of these relationships for granted, we value every one. We have a high calibre board. They represent a cross-section of public and private sector with those relevant skills and experiences from right across the region. We have pretty much a balance of members representing where our population is in the region. And for that reason, there's four currently from the Liberals on the board. We have a staff of 6 to 8, including David and myself, which does fluctuate a little bit year to year, depending on project funding. So our purpose is to develop and grow the region's economy and livability. And yes, that is a big job, and it's very broad-based. We have a vision for an economically prosperous region. And our mission is to lead, facilitate, and collaborate to realise that potential. Regional scale part is important in that we prioritise work that is regional, has greater impact in any one LGA. However, we do work locally with our councils, staff in particular. We do that through several means, including a group, an economic development network, which I chair, and that's a great platform for council staff, economic development staff, RDA, and other stakeholders to inform each other and collaborate, leading on cross-border projects. There's also the project work which we undertake with your staff and collaboratively support businesses in the council. So I mentioned we are funded by three levels of government. Please inform you that Minister Catherine King recently announced a 5-year extension to the federal funding starting the beginning of next financial year. And that is the time that our council's funding is also due for renewal. So I'd just like to outline the value that we're delivering for council's investment. For starters, collectively, our six councils' investment or contributions are leveraged with fourfold investment from state and federal governments, as well as the in-kind contribution of our board members who devote their time to our board. The supported channel. So whilst council has its own relationships with state and federal governments to draw on, RDA provides an opportunity for a supported channel to those levels of government. Those two levels of government fund us in part to be the eyes and ears on the ground in the region. It's a really important role. Without those eyes and ears, and there's obviously other stakeholders that do this also, we can't expect them to understand what the issues and opportunities are. The unity of RDA and council in our messaging to state and federal governments is critical. It builds government confidence about making informed and supported decisions for our region. And it's particularly powerful when we work as a region. We've done that in the past around public transport and the Hills Freight Bypass. We deliver an impactful project suite, which I'll dive through in a minute. It's impactful because they're tangible economic development outcomes. We're incredibly agile to respond to the needs and opportunities for all three levels of government, our communities and our industries as they arise. The fourth area is as a delivery partner. We're a delivery partner, particularly for the federal and state, and sometimes for council as well. Couple of examples. At the moment, we're working on a regional drought resilience plan on behalf of the federal government's future drought fund. We're also two years into a 3-year program delivering the state's regional leadership programs. And like all good organisations, our life always comes back to our strategic regional plan, forms everything we do. It's due for an update next year. We look forward to collaborating with the communities, so the council and staff, when we do undertake that update. The plan itself was released in 2022 and has three focus areas. So growing regional productivity, enhancing regional innovation preparedness, and strengthening our most competitive industries. This regional plan is important in terms of alignment and collaboration with councils' economic development strategies, but it also provides guidance and references for community groups, industry groups, and businesses in their own planning, but also in support of funding applications. Now, I'll just touch on those three areas. So the first one is growing regional productivity and public transport, freight, housing are the focuses of this space, although we can respond like I said before as other things arise. I probably don't need to tell you that good infrastructure is critical in overcoming commercial barriers to development and productivity, but also maximising that livability piece through social inclusion and connectivity and accessibility. In this space, we also maintain a pipeline of coming and planned public and private infrastructure investment, and that's shared widely, particularly in state government, but also with our federal members of MAYA. And in state government, again, has the eyes and ears on the ground that helps inform departments and others like InvestSA, South Australian Tourism Commission, etc., on what's happening in the region. The public transport part is particularly relevant for Adelaide Hills Council. In 2019, we released a public transport study, which is the result of a couple of years' work with consultants and was done jointly with this council and others on public transport for the hills and the Flora. That really is, despite being 5 years old now, and we're pleased with some investment that's been made to date, still a lot of work to do, and in SA regional communities are still way behind other states when it comes to per head expenditure on public transport. All of the recommendations of that study in 2019 are still relevant and are still informing our advocacy. And I hope yours, as the Department of Transport, SATA and others, when we're advocating for that increased level of spend. Our freight routes, in particular, the freight bypass is very topical for the hills. It's good to see it's still got oxygen in the gap. We support that, and I think long term, the other thing people that might not have understood before they read the GARP was the future of Murray Bridge. There's going to be 40,000 more people at Murray Bridge on top of the growth at Mount Barker. This freeway is just going to be under more and more pressure. I won't go into housing too much other than to say that before it became a national issue, it was an issue for a long time for Kangaroo Island, particularly after the fires. They lost over 100 houses, and that's where we focused our effort in that space. Regional innovation and preparedness. Every year there seems to be more and more mega trends and pending doom and change coming at us from all angles. And sometimes it's hard to focus, but these are the four areas that we decided to focus on in our strategy. Around climate change, we're a partner with Council on the region's Resilient Hills and Coast Group, and we support that group's region climate change adaptation plan. In September, we committed even further and entered an agreement to auspice the funds and contractual relationships for Resilient Hills Coast as an in-kind gesture to that group. And we also support regional projects aligned with climate change adaptation, for example, the promotion of the Small Business Energy Efficiency Grant. And related to climate, I mentioned earlier, and I'll talk about it in a sec, our work on the Regional Drought Resilience Plan. For an ageing demographic, no part of our region is not impacted by this, but in general, our work to grow the economy and jobs growth and livability is working to, work against that ageing demographic, which does have impact. In digitisation, our role is predominantly focused on bringing digital education to our businesses in the region through federal government programs like Digital Solutions. In skilled workforce, I mentioned earlier, into two years now, into a three-year program, state-funded leadership program. This has two components, the Marquee Inspired Leadership Program, which is of our own design with our delivery partner. And this year we had seven people from Adelaide Hills Council out of 20, which is terrific. And I'm pretty sure some of you in this room helped tap people on the shoulder and promote this program. We've had amazing feedback, and I hope that through our newsletter, or quarterly reports, you'll get to see some of that feedback, because it's been wonderful. So we now have a network of almost 40 inspired leaders across the region, and we're working on ways to bring those people together from the different cohorts to work on local and sub-regional issues together. The last piece about strengthening our most competitive sectors. These were selected due to their level of specialisation, their competitiveness, and their propensity for export, important characteristics, sectors that we want to support. Manufacturing, in fact, rates are a growing sector, particularly in food and beverage. And
yeah, to mention my name, Mr.
John. Thank you. And this council particularly, a very large percentage of the region's food and beverage is happening in this council. Our award-winning Hills and Coast Business Grant focuses on this sector, and there's been six businesses in this council in receipt of that funding. Agriculture, I'll skip through a little bit, but just point out that we've been a mentor and gold sponsor for Small Acreage Field Days held at Echunga and run by Stirling Rotary. And that Regional Drought Resilience Plan, which is currently with CSIRO for a final review, and we hope to launch that early in the new year. Tourism, similarly, equally important sector. We work very closely with Adelaide Hills Tourism, and particularly one-on-one with Tanya Jarman, and work with businesses to support. I'll just wrap up, and I won't go through these points individually. This does wrap up the presentation. But this is an extra role that is expected of RDA from all the three levels of government, and that is connecting the region and government. So connecting within the region, we do this extraordinarily well also. We don't know who to connect someone with, we know who to find out who to connect someone to. Providing that regional intel up to government, that economic advice, super important. And then the program promotion and delivery. So being the face for government in that promotion and delivery of programs. So thank you. Hopefully I've stuck in, and if there's time for questions, we'd be happy to take them on board.
Yeah, so we do have some time for questions. And I've got one account for lunch.
Thank you, one thing that sort of came to mind, have you given any consideration in recent years to promoting or trying to assist ag tech in our region? Because that seems to be something that's really quite complementary to industries we have.
Yeah, thank you for the question. When we developed our strategy, AgTech, we believe was the one area that we could have some impact, because agriculture is such a, well, for starters, it's a very broad-based sector, very diverse, but it's also quite well organised, particularly in the commodities. You know, levies are raised and research is done and support is provided. So AgTech was seen as a space to do that. Two years ago, we took, can't remember the number now, it's between 10 and 20 farms in the region. We sponsored their attendance of an AgTech expo in Adelaide. And we do focus where we can on promoting opportunities for the ag sector to get involved in programs around AgTech. Admittedly, it's difficult to have really wide impact, but we see ourselves as that connector and you know, provider of information about government programs and its best approach we can.
Yes, in the report moving in the financials, you received core funding of 265,000 for students come off the state. The more interesting one from the councils, you received $296,000 from the council. I'm curious to know how the county contributions are determined. I note that Adelaide Hills Council, we are the largest contributor. We put in $76,348, Mount Barker $76,000, down to Yankalilla $16,000. So what is the basis for allocating the grants?
Thank you for the question. The funding breakdown is has a historical basis based on population, and that's why the Two Hills Councils are the biggest funders of IDR. For the upcoming renewal of the funding agreement, we've been working with councils on updating the formula, because the historic formula is probably well, it needs updating because the populations have changed over time. So that original formula is over a decade old. So as I say, we're talking to councils at the moment, and that formula is based on a base contribution and then a per head of population contribution to make it equitable across the region. It's actually the same formula that's used for Southern Hills LGA.
Yeah, that makes sense. But just going to make the comment of, but waiting for years, something like horizontal physical visualization, like we hear from the grants, where they didn't use that term.
Thank you. We've got time for one quick question. Anyone's question? None? Well, thank you very much for coming to present to us tonight.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll move on to item 10, questions on notice. We haven't got any. Item 11, motions on notice. We also don't have any. So we'll go on to officer reports decision item. And the first one tonight is 12.1, I believe.
Yes, I think we have the children conflict of interest. So the Driftwood Agricultural Sporting Group has sponsorised for their particular application by Activating Bridgewater. They're not an incorporated body, and I'm chair of that committee group, so I don't think it would be appropriate for me to be in the room as it could be considered a game different depending on the council decision. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else have a concept they want to have this item? Councillor Herman?
General conflict of interest. I sponsor the Mount Coronet and Districts Community Association. Gallery, one remember. General, and I believe I can separate my public views.
Thank you. Okay, does anyone have any questions? I will just do the administration. It's not allowed to move something in relation to the walls and stuff.
That's pretty.
It's an interesting speak. Question for seconding?
I'll be a second. I think actually Chris was first.
But thank you. You want that for you. Would you like to speak to the chair?
No, I don't think I'll be, thank you.
I'm still going for that. We didn't change the fact of the ground. Thank you. Would anyone like to debate this item? Okay, all those in favour? That's carried unanimously. So congratulations to all of those groups who've received a grant. So we'll move on to item... Oh, yes. Tom, do you mind getting Councillor Dan back for our public? Sorry, we can't take questions from the gallery, I'm afraid. So that's the move is printed, Councillor Daniels, so you're aware of what happened when you're out of the room.
Yes.
So item 12.2, I would declare a general conflict of interest at this item. I'm involved with the Charleston Community Centre. They applied for a grant, but they're not one of the recommendations, so I think I could stay in the room. Anyone else have a vote to come for the grant?
Yeah, thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'll declare a general conflict of interest in relation to this matter, simply because I'm a member. I reside in Forest Range, and there's a grant for the Forest Range Recreation Ground. But as I'm not a member of the Committee of Management, I'll stay in the room and vote on the item.
Anyone else? Councillor Lemon?
Sorry, sponsor. I'm going to sponsor the burning time. It's 40 years ago.
Yeah, thank you. Any other conflict? Okay. Would anyone got any questions or administration for anything on them? Okay, would someone like to move something? At the lunch. As printed.
Yes, as printed. I'll just very briefly speak to it. I think I had to read through what information on the applications, and I think it's a fantastic sort of testament to this grants program that it's been oversubscribed, and we've had to reduce the amount. And I actually think, reduce the amount less than what the amount requested was for people, organisations that have got grants. So I think that really shows that our community is really supportive of this sort of grants program, and it actually shows how much the Adelaide Hills Council is into community. So I think it's a really good sign.
Councillor Barton, you'll second.
Thank you. I would love to second. There's some really great projects here, projects that, you know, a number of us have been talking to our communities about for quite some time. As an advocate of all of the sports that we play in the hills, it's great to see how many projects there are here around sporting clubs and enabling the high level of kids' participation we have in sport here in the Adelaide Hills to continue. I think the last time we did a survey, we had one of the highest rates of children participating in organised sport in the entire country, which is really great. And so it means that the investment that we make in these facilities means that, you know, our kids and our young people and our old people, because we know clubs can sometimes be great in terms of the support they give to our communities, that we can continue to support all of these incredible initiatives. So I support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hurley, you'd like to speak?
Yeah, just a couple of comments. Value towards the community sports project is $629,000. Council putting some money, it's a lot of community money going in, so it's over well over $100 of benefit. But another point, maybe we have to look at the amount of money that we provide in that community recreation, still with these grants. It's oversubscribed, And many times the reason given is good project, good project, just don't have made fund of it. Just make that point.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to debate the item? None? Would you like to have a round of luck? No. Okay, all those in favour? That is carried unanimously. Congratulations to all, that improves too. All right, we'll move on to item 12.3, Regional Climate Action Plan. Yes, and to the public, if you are here for those items, please feel free to either stay or go to you if you wish to either. Does anyone have any questions in relation to this item? No, we'd like to move something. Councillor Nash.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Particular comments to make on this. It's a really good program and a compliments for good organisation and compliments what we're doing at the council level in the area of mitigation. I always get this confused, mitigation, adaptation. I think this is about adaptation basically. So this is helping our region to adapt in general to the effects that we know are happening now of climate change and probably too late to actually stop and reduce them, turn them back, but it helps our region to actually adapt to what's happening in our region. And I particularly like the fact that there's some analysis in the plan, which talks about the scientific impacts of climate change on our particular region, as opposed to just sort of general sort of statements about what's going to happen in Australia, what's going to happen in the world. It's actually talking about things like increased number of heat waves, fires, and things like that. I mean, you could view that as negative, but the good thing about it is that we actually have a reasonably good understanding of what the impact is going to be, and is going to be on change. It's good to get together with our other councils and other partners, as we said, RDA, to actually to work on this issue and send the state government as well.
Thank you. It's all like to second the item. And for us, would you like to speak? No. Anyone like to debate your account for them?
Yeah, second me. Now, I'd like something related to the mid-range between the state and the state, coming and going on this.
Point 7.
Which says we going to allocate 20,000 for the next 6 years. Plan runs 2030. It's 120 grand commitment. In view of our financial position, I just question whether we should be making commitments like that. We may need to say climate 120,000, that could be a way to be given notice to withdraw our support from that at some stage. And Mr. Warden, this isn't a legally binding agreement part of something else. Just as a general comment, I don't think we'd be making commitments to too much funding. I'm trying to get our service to find out what strategies we're going to adopt the rain in that effect.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to debate an item? Back to me, would you like to provide a response?
I will respond to the comments that we just made. Look, I think we make commitments to lots of things. We employ almost 200 staff. We have lots of locations. We're doing a service review, but I don't think making commitment on this is actually, causing the service review to be sabotaged, basically. I think we do that, all the things we make commitments on and do stuff. So I don't think that's a big issue.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Oh, no, that's I'll move to the vote. All those in favour? All those against? No, carried. Okay, moving on to the nominations to the Dog and Cat Management Board. Now, just having a look to see at which point we need to declare material conflicts of interest. Okay, so Councillor Parkin, did you want to declare your general conflict of interest?
Yeah, thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor, I will declare a general conflict of interest. As my father is the chair of the Dog and Cat Board, I don't really retain a benefit, but then there may be perception of some influence potentially. I will remain in the room for the meeting, but I won't participate in the vote, and I will refrain from voting. Thanks.
Thank you. And Councillor Stock, I believe you only need to declare decision two.
Correct.
Okay, would somebody like to move decision one?
Can you know just that?
Yes, sure.
Are there any other nominations coming from the floor for the decision? No, sir. Sure. So, you know, Councillor Stock, you've had to deal with. Is there anyone else?
I'll declare a material conflict of interest. Now, I reiterate my previous comments at the opening of the meeting in relation to this position, attracting a modest and full thing.
Thank you.
I'm just trying to move decision one point one, which is the report we received, and number one and second one, which become number two, and the endorsement nomination of Councillor Stock. No one else for the dog cat thing for the head setter.
Okay, would you like to speak to that item?
I don't know. I think we should, it's good to have representative, if I recall correctly, Councillor Jan Loveday some many years ago. Was a member of that board, and we found it difficult to have that direct line of contact. And I think that none Councillor Stock was successful with the same. I think he's got good qualifications, he's a very good speaker, understanding policies. Read them up and done.
Thank you. Councillor
Conant,
the second. Would you like to speak?
Yeah, thank you, Deputy Mayor. Just briefly, I think the Chamber should encourage elected members to get on board such as this. I think it expands the skill set of the Chamber and exposes elected members to additional opportunities to expand their skills. So I endorse the motion.
Thank you. Councillor Chin, do you want to debate?
No.
Anyone like to debate it on? So the vote, all those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Mr. Reporters, would you mind bringing Councillor Austin Stock back in? So, has been endorsed as a nominee, Councillor Austin Stock.
Thank you.
Moving on to item 12.5, Fall River Floodplain Management Authority Membership. Councillor Thurman, you indicated you might have a conflict of interest at this time.
I am the councillor for them on the board.
I'm not declaring any interest.
Right, thank you. Would somebody like to move something in relation to this one? Councillor Daniel. Would you like to speak? Someone like to second? Councillor Armstrong. Would you like to speak?
No.
Councillor Martin, would you like to debate the item?
Just a quick comment, I think a lot has been said about this in the past. And I had a good conversation with my wife about this actually on the weekend as I was reading through the agenda, that she agreed with me that that it seems bizarre that we're actually naming this organisation given the impact that we have on that floodplain and the propensity for flooding in some of our areas within the council district, and that maybe some investment in that might be a better use of council resources than being a member of this body. I know it's a historical reason that I remember, but I think we need to bite the bullet, particularly the deficits we've got on mind. So I do a submission.
Thank you. Anyone else like to debate? Councillor Hammond.
So, have you had any discussions about the content of this with the chairman of the board?
Yes, through the mayor. I had some such early conversation with the chair of the board, and I have had progressive conversations with the CEOs of the member councils. And what I anticipate to do is once I've gathered all that information, is I'll hold a workshop with the members and relay some of the information through that process.
Councillor Daniel, did you have a question?
Just to follow up in relation to communication. She had a meeting with the Lower Region Council CEO yesterday that proceeded as planned. Are you able to summarise how that discussion went? It's okay if you can't, it can be good to hear. And also, have we, since the agenda came out, received a response from the minister?
Yeah, I'll answer the last question first. We haven't received a response from the minister as yet. The meeting with the CEO yesterday went quite well. He appreciates our position, appreciates that our contribution to flooding lands is quite minimal. It's not a significant amount. But what the association are interested in is getting federal and state funding, and therefore what they're looking at is it best to be a united group of councils, or is there opportunity for someone to exit at this point? So that's what I'm hoping to bring back to council once I've met with every CEO.
Yes, thank you, and through you, Deputy Mayor. It says approximately 20,000 for consultant fees. Was that quarterly or was that an estimation?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, that's an estimate.
That's an estimate. So what do you expect that to increase to should it blow out? What's your anticipation on that estimation?
So the consistent approach is if we are looking at exhausting that amount, I will bring back a report to council and clearly articulate what more this administration will
end. Thank you. Councillor Hammond, do you have another question?
Yeah, no, I was going to debate you on. The next meeting of the authorities on the Thursday, that commits the 12th of December, where we've got a working group on finances that's set up by high level CEOs on that Monday. My input to that has been that this project is bigger than local government and it should be funded and owned by the state. Owned by the state government as a dam or whatever. Like Liberal Reservoir has got a dam, Kangaroo Creek has got a dam. That's what, in effect, this is, although in counteract, it's not the word catchment, it's called stormwater management. That's the kind of talking point. But clearly, the number may be mentioned at the time, but it's millions of dollars and far bigger than what we have. So that's what we'll be debating. But just on the point, the Munster recommendation said that
by December. I understand the reasons for that, because if we give notice now and we are aware of it, or it kicks in on the 1st of July next year, that's according to the charter. If we don't give it by the end of December, then you lose 12 months. There's been rumblings in the other councils about withdrawing, even though they are made beneficiaries or contributors to the schemes, but as though it's never got enough weeks to go to the balance, the minister might well have been back at those funds gone. So I'm looking at it this way. One decided to withdraw, that's only one. Others are kind of getting off the act as well. Certain efforts by many councils to get out that might pull a bit more weight. I think I'm happy with December 2024. Is there another council meeting after the 12th?
No, it's another 10. Yeah.
10 of December. Oh, it's not.
No.
That's before the year. Yeah, that may have added some clarity to what the board's going. That may have been special. Yeah, that's my comments on it. It's the which way you attack it. Now, it's important the concept of getting out, it's just the process of getting out, that if one goes or you get a bit of, you know, united powers and get everyone pulled out, united voice.
Thank you. Anyone else like to say the answer? Councillor Daniel.
Yeah, I guess just following on from that. It's always been a funny one being on council for a while. Each year we contribute not a huge amount in the context of the budget, but still a meaningful amount of money that can be spent in other ways for our community. But seeing that as part of the greater will purpose of that authority, I think the struggle that's come with us in recent years is the monetary value of that has increased significantly, particularly with this financial year. And ultimately, it does not benefit us as an individual council. And I think if other councils are contemplating or choosing to try and go down the same path as us, it'd be interesting to see how the minister views that, because for us, I think it's fairly clear that it's costing us a significant amount of money, which is to the detriment of our own community, because they don't ultimately receive any benefit, which I think it's much harder for any of the other councils to justify that same good with them. And for that reason, I'm supportive of this motion.
Thank you. We'll go to the vote. All those in favour? Let's carry unanimously. Okay, so moving on to item 12.6, which is the draft 23-24, which is in space 23-24 annual report. Have anyone got any questions on this item? Councillor Hammond, would you like to move?
I'll move the adoption of the annual report and statements. And just briefly, the audit committee met Monday, yeah, this day, a week ago, and then through it. There were a few minor corrections to be included in it, such as there were some figures missing where that information wasn't available, still wasn't available at the time it's in here, but I've been sure that they will go in. Again, it's a very comprehensive report. I think some, you know, people that are interested in local government, we'll have a look at it. It's a good document, put together well. It's readable. I suppose that you mentioned that anything's readable, but it's a readable document. And it does convey a lot of information to the members. But one thing that I thought of between all of them and now and building that day, it doesn't seem to be any reference in the report, and standing correctly with it, of the cap operations. Don't seem to have the number of development applications considered or approved, not approved, etc. But I don't think it's a requirement of the regulations that be reported, but I will find out as a useful piece of information to have. One time
I recall correctly, we get a memo from the director, the principal at the time, outlining the coming calendar year, the number of DAs that were lodged, the numbers in the category, what they were for, the value of it, all that sort of thing. People can have a look at this, but couldn't believe that. But I don't think it's a legislative fine. The annual report's fine as it is, and I'll recommend members read it and adopt it.
Thank you. I'd like to second Councillor
Daniel. Just that I hope they have already in the scenario agenda. I appreciate, as always, quite a lot how we present important information in a visually effective way. I think that's really important because people don't want to see this whole suite of over us. And I find that is beneficial for our community to absorb those key points that we have in the report.
Thank you. Councillor Grant, would you like to debate the item?
Yeah, just add my thoughts. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I commend the staff on this. I think it's an excellent report in that it details tangible outcomes, measurable outcomes. And I think that's really important that allows us to measure our performance year after year. And it's not simply containing speaking generalizations. It's really detailed. And I think it's the best way to show how well the council is functioning, which, you know, I think on the numbers is exceptionally good. So I think the entire council should be commended on the result. So
thank you. Would anyone else like to speak to the item? Okay, we'll go to the vote. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Okay, on to item 12.7, the quarterly council performance report 2425,
quarter one. Can I confirm any questions? You're looking for something. Members, bear with me, I'm not working the floor. I've been through the audit committee and Councillor Stirling was on that too, but I'm not sure that you want to speak to the chair. So I'll move the recommendation to you and the couple of big comments on it. In fact, point two, that's probably the selling one that mentioned there. We are changing some of the performance impacts. The capital works program has changed an annual figure of 90% of the quarterly reporting. See how they've done it. Because with capital expenditure, you can get months, months and plans, not that wet weather, the building of project, so it's not a lean flash cut. I mean, cash flow, your project might bottom out towards the end of the year. You spent no money in the first quarter, then your capital works program doesn't look on target, but in fact, it is. But that's one change. Next one is lost time injuries. And I might refer that to an officer to comment in a minute. And C, employee turnover has changed two targets, which is quite reasonable. 20%. For the new starters, but people so they like local government, they get into a while and they get out. So you're likely to have higher turnover in the first 12 months of someone's employment. With the quarterly employment running a 12 monthly percentage at the end of the quarter and 15% for general turnover. So longer serving staff have a lower figure of turnover. That's someone explaining better than I can at point D.
Maybe we'll get your comments and then I'll put the questions with you.
That's
and we've got a nice comment on the what's 2B, which is the last time change of title.
The previous metric was the number of lost time injuries. The net doesn't differentiate between the severity of one injury against another. So whilst if we would always target pattern injuries, we feel that the more descriptive measure is the amount of time lost. And I think this is not really the same approach. It gives a better description of those injuries as well.
Thank you.
I'd
like to second
Yeah, I might just second, but before that, I could ask a question.
Yeah.
My question is for Mr. Lewis, and there's no expectation, but Did Mr. Lewis have any other comments to make on this item? Putting our numbers, Mayor.
Do you mean on the whole report or
yeah.
on the
no, on any of it.
not especially. I think it's pretty self-contained and it's largely consistent approach year on year, and we've identified three items that we want to sort of tweak. We think there's good rationales for doing those. We're not reading with that. They are very much with your self-sent. What we think was most important, certainly, other than that, I don't really much to run to.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you were just thank you, Mr. Lewis, for that confirmation. I'm much reassured, and thank you, Mr. Councillor Hannan, for the item that our support.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak to the item? Thank you for you, Dr. Mayor. Can I please ask about point C? With that target, are we now saying instead of saying 7 to 15%, we are just going to have 15% minimum target for the general turnover in 2C?
That's what I think that point is.
Yeah. I just speak to the item, yes. I won't be supporting this motion because I don't feel comfortable with point C. I think we had a maximum in that target of 7 to 15%, and rather than try and address our turnover, our general turnover, which we know is high at 21.3%, we're pushing our KPIs up rather than trying to address the issue and push them down. And I think that there's information that's come to this chamber which I would feel more comfortable knowing that we were trying to set a target of keeping it at 7 and 15% and aiming for 7% rather than pushing up the minimum target, so that when we do come back and we see perhaps another target in its 20s, we'll feel more comfortable with that because we've set a minimum of 15. I think we're lowering the bar instead of increasing it, and I don't feel comfortable with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak to the item? Back to the Councillor Hannan, would you like a vote of the pass? No? Okay, we'll go to the vote. All those in favour and against? That's carried. Okay, so moving on to the budget review of 1, 24 and 25. I just note there's a highlighted section in here. Is it the administration to kind of speak to
why that's different from the yeah. Okay. I'm going to put that on the chair a little bit. That's something I thought it would be done. It wasn't at the other meeting, so it was a big thing that watched that.
Okay, thank you. So,
Councillor
March, have you got a question?
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I do have a question. I did actually send it through to Mr. Lewis yesterday, I think it was. But I will ask it. In the statements, there is a comment made that the underlying operating service, i.e. after removal of one-off adjustments, remains in alignment with the original budget at $0.457 million. So that's for the operating surplus. But then there's some calculations in there, well, not calculations, which say that $884,000 adjustment for salary capitalization is treated as a one-off. But then the calculation where it's actually said treats it as an ongoing thing, I guess. And I think there was something else as well that was subtracted, but it's also treated as ongoing. There just seems to be a bit of an inconsistency there.
Just my apologies, I don't resist that. I think it was the day before. My apologies, not for stoning. It's in my mind. The actual wording is probably a bit unfortunate, even if you put it wrong. I think the idea in terms of saying the underlying surplus is, or deficit is what we've experienced in the past. that if we took out the two major changes, which was the change in depreciation and the change in capitalization of payroll, we would actually still be consistent. And the real impact to bottom line here is those two items. So it's sort of, it's to be expected given the news that we discussed earlier in the year. But yeah, that's not really the way the one came out. That's what was intended.
Yes, thank you, I just wanted to clarify around the adjustments of the legal fees. So we're expected to spend 170 million on extra, or is that what we budgeted for? $170,000. Is that what we're expected on top of what we've already budgeted? Mr.
Lewis? Yeah, so given what we know now and the legal expenses we've incurred, and if we assume that the rest of the year is a normal year, then we would expect to, that our expenditure would require an additional $170,000 in budget. So basically, we're comfortable that we need $170,000, but we don't know what will happen in the rest of the year. That's assuming it's a broadly normal year, whereas last year and in this year haven't been.
Okay, and so I do want to follow up with that. So where it says risks on the following page of $230,000 are expected to be spent, does that include the $170,000 or is that in addition to the $170,000?
That will be in addition, and that is on the assumption that the challenges that we've seen in the start of the year and towards the end of last year continue. We do see a feasible line between now and the end of the year where we would spend that additional 230. So just to confirm in total, it could be 400,000, but what we're putting in the budget now is the 170.
So that would be more than what we had last year. It was around 370, was it, last year? Okay, so we're spending more. In a follow-up to that, I just want some clarification. I know that we can't go into too much detail, but are we under litigation? Is that why we're spending more money? No. And so it was reported in the Mount Barker Courier that we're having more complaints to the Ombudsman. Is this where this money is going?
Who would like to take that?
Through you acting
there? No. Am I going to get more clarity then around why we're spending about 70,000 more or 30,000 more?
So just to be very clear, the Ombudsman complaints are the Ombudsman's complaints. They don't necessarily come to the Ombudsman or they don't reach out.
But we've seen them go to the level of investigation which requires lawyers, and that doesn't come for free.
I might throw it in the field because So, the majority of the legal fees is in relation to the independent inquiry.
Thank you for clarification. Okay, have we got any further questions? Councillor Parker.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions. I think I might have a similar one to Councillor Brown. And look, please excuse my ignorance, but I'm going through the appendices. I'm having a look here at Appendix 1, which is the operating budget review, and I can see that we have the adjustment for depreciation, which we discussed, which is $1.3 million in the negative, but we've got total adjustments for $2.185,705, which is like almost an additional $900,000 in adjustments that we weren't expecting. And that is a bit surprising. And if I have a look down here at the next one, which is sort of capital expenditure, I would assume that then there is an additional overspend of $2,277,985, which is significant. So what we actually have is you're asking us to approve a budget review of nearly $4 million. That's actually a lot. And I'm not sure I can just wave that through. that feels like a lot to me, and I feel like if you're going to ask us to approve that much, am I missing something here? That's the question. I'd like to respond to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So the two big items that impact the operating statement are two matters which were brought to the council last year that really that impacted last year, 23-24, and those are the change in depreciation,
yeah,
1.3 million, and the change in the capitalization payable.
Okay, great, thank you.
And that is the 2 million, and that's 2 million every year, and that's why we see that impact this year as well, and we'll see it next year. And we'll unpack that a lot more when we talk long-term financial plan, financial strategy. The 2 million with regards to capital are changes to capital program. This is not like, it's not asking more money to do the same things. It is saying, well, additional items that are now on the capital program.
Okay, so I guess my question around is that why there are now additional items on the capital program and they weren't in the initial budget. I mean, I know there's a couple of items around fabric which were actually taken out of the initial budget and they now seem to have gone back in. Which is a little bit of a concern. So I just wanted to ask some questions about why there's like an additional $275,000 for buildings in fabric. There was an additional $100,000, I think, in a driveway, which was, I think, taken out of the original package from memory. So I'm not sure why, and I think that was taken out so it would fit the budget. So I'm just not sure why it's back in. So if someone could explain that, that would be good.
Thanks. Yeah, did you want to take that or did you want to go back to Mr. Lewis?
So these are items that the project manager is coming back and asking to fund this year. You can say no to them. These pieces of work, some were a lot were deferred from last year. A number of these items are deferred from last year or they've been reconsidered. But you can say no to them as well.
Thank you. One follow-up question. So if we were to approve this budget, how do we then say no to them? So can we approve the budget? And to me, it feels like that's a workshop. It doesn't feel like that's a nothing.
You can put changes in the resolution to take items in and move the recap for the numbers.
Thank you. Councillor Grant, do you have a question?
I've got a couple of questions. The first one's an easy one. In item 2C, could we change the word rational to ratio?
So we haven't actually got anything moved yet. So
Yeah, but that's proposed. But anyway, it's just annoying me. now I can think. And I guess the other question is, we've discussed this in the past when we've workshopped capital works budgets, and traditionally we don't manage to implement more than, is it $16 million in capital works in a year? So we'll try, in a sense, we're trying to constrain it because otherwise we have constant rollovers. So this seems to have gone against the mood of constraining capital works to actually what are manageable by our project teams. Can you comment on that?
So this is a water committee as well, and we have assurances are given by the administration of this is the new capacity, but I would like Mr. Lewis to say.
So if we go back a year ago, we had a capital budget contained, which we addressed and we brought it down. This year, we're going up to, I believe, like 20 million. We've looked at our peak capacity is probably, when allowing inflation, probably around 18 to 19 million. This 20 million might be a stretch target, but we believe that we've got every chance of delivering it. That said, budget review 2 and 3 will may bring in changes, may bring in reductions. We are pushing the managers to really interrogate their projects and so that process of assessing where they're going is improving, and we hope to continue improving that. So what I would say is that I think there is a fair chance that we can deliver that program. And if we can't, then we will bring back amendments in budget review 2 and 3 to tighten up those numbers. A project doesn't get completed because specific events prevent it from being completed, but we don't necessarily know which project that's going to occur to. So if there's a pressing reason to do all this selection project, I'd suggest that we keep going with all of them and accept that one or two may get deferred or carried over into the following year, but simply because we don't know exactly which ones those will be. I think the projects should be assessed basically on whether they are priority and whether we should be doing them, not on ability to deliver them when our project manager is saying that they're still being done to deliver them. That might not have been the clearest answer. I think our land will prosecute the things. I apologise if that is.
Councillor Grantham, did you have any more questions?
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Perhaps I could ask Councillor Herman, as a member of the Audit Committee, is that possible?
We'll hear the question then.
Yeah, because I guess the additional $2.2 million for the capital budget, because we haven't assessed that as part of developing the budget, I'm not that comfortable with it. Does Councillor Herman have any comment on the Audit Committee's view to these sorts of, you know, it's a significant alteration and we are in exceptional circumstances. A comment would be appreciated.
Perhaps that might be best
addressed
in the debate,
essentially.
Do you have any other question?
I have a question. That's a council.
Yes.
On page 34, plant program, an extra $1 million, taking expenditure for $2.188 million, and there's no comment there. So, could I have an explanation of the additional $1 million would be in that report?
Mr. Waters might be able to help us out. Yeah,
and it is pretty brilliant. And it's carried forward in previous years.
Mr. Waters, did you want to have any?
The merit split related, it's carried forward. No, look, thank you. We did have some boys in last year. You might may not recall a number of items were deferred. This accounts for a number of items on the list. The last year, we did what Mr. Lewis described and took them out of the budget as we went through last year. So we're trying to do a bit more, I guess, truth in budgeting as we went. And what that meant was we come to this year, we still need to catch up with that plant replacement. You recall we talked about the time it's taking to get vehicles. It's taken 12 months plus, 18 months often in replacement heavy fleet. So we're kind of in that catch-up phase. And now plant items are coming quicker than they were 12 months ago. So we're kind of now that concertina and we're catching up with that. And I guess just while we're at it, a number of the other projects on that list in Appendix 3 were similar to last year too, and Michael will workshop very quick, rapid fire workshop on a number of things a few weeks ago.
But that comment wasn't approved off, should be.
No, you're right, it's fixed point for someone who has dropped off in errors and so on. Apologies.
So we might move on to moving something. Councillor Grant, would you like to move something?
Yeah, I'd like to move something. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'd like to move that item as printed minus paragraph 2B, which I don't think that will change the numbers in 2C, which will become 2B. And then the matters I've spoken about can be resolved in debate. I mean, I see this is the right nation to be put in.
So just before you speak to the item, I'll just speak to the item first and then I'll ask the law question.
Yeah, thank you. In brief, I think considering the financial circumstances we're in, I know capital expenditure is often not considered relevant to operating budget, but it's certainly associated, and I think we need to be mindful of the our financial position on both fronts, capital and operating expenditure. These are additional expenditures that we didn't address when we were developing the budget. That doesn't mean they aren't good expenditures, but I think they're probably also not urgent expenditures. And yes, our capital budget is significant. It'll be another borrowing, of course, and I think we should be mindful of the level of borrowing. And a little bit of constraint in our budget may well serve us well in the future. So I'll ask the Chamber to consider this, and I'll be very interested in hearing the debate.
Thank you. Councillor Grant, did you have any
Ms. Lewis, can I ask a question from the chair? So if, with that item removed, what implications does that have for all the projects listed under Appendix 3?
So we will not be able to continue building. Some of those are related to our CRP grants as well, so we need to reconsider that what that means for those grants, and those grants we might not be able to claim, so we might be a significant number. And also it will make a difference to the rating to the expense.
Okay,
Councillor
Daniel.
I guess a follow-up question that would also have an impact on the Office of Sport and Rec grants that are partly funding a number of port resurfacing behind craters, particularly Woodside, that would no longer go ahead.
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Do you have a seconder?
Probably not.
Last time. Okay, I'm going to call that last form to the seconder. Would someone else like to move something in relation to the button? Councillor Daniel.
The original question. That's great, thanks. So, including the highlighter bit that we leave that in to be said.
Would you like to speak to
Yes, thank you. Budget reviews have a significant impact on our operations. I think that point was, I guess, major then in the sense that these are a lot of different projects. They all have implications both internally for the administration but also externally for our community. I don't think it's appropriate to just strip all that away on the fly without talking through it. I think if there's an elected body we want to reconsider any of these, we should do that through conversation, whether that be a workshop or something like that. If particular elected members feel strongly enough to do so. Overall, I do think a lot of work has gone into this budget review process in circumstances which are unusual given the number of changes that have taken place with our finances of late, but I'm not comfortable to just strip away all of those projects, particularly when significant amounts are linked to external funding, with those projects in jeopardy potentially not occurring at all. I guess it could be, further to that, I think if people have big concerns regarding particular projects, that they could raise that in advance with the administration to give us as an elected body a little bit of thought on the night as to whether we wanted to change those. But I wouldn't feel comfortable, and I don't think it's appropriate to be going through these items by item at this point in the evening. That should have been prior to us sitting in and debating the item.
Thank you, Councillor Pascal. Did you want to say another have a question?
I have a question, please. Sure. Thank you, through Deputy Mayor. If we were not to support the additional $230,000 in legal fees because we're not sure what it is, where does that come out of the deficit? That brings down to 1.5.
Mr. Lewis? The $230,000 is not in there.
Okay.
We're only budgeting the extra 170. What we flagged in the report is a concern that, or we see possibility that we might ultimately come back an extra $230,000 in budget later in the year. But it is not there at this point.
And I just need to clarify, that's not because we're facing litigation, it's because we've got an independent inquiry.
So the 230 is really allowing for the possibility of further expenses probably of a similar nature.
Yes, okay.
And I can't ask the stock for last second. We have a question.
I'll second.
Would you like to speak?
No.
Anyone like to debate the item? Councillor Parry.
Yeah, thank you. I can't actually support this motion in its current form, and having put some thought in our items, you're more comfortable deferring this motion so that you've got time to actually unpack which of these pieces of expenditure we're comfortable with and which we're not comfortable with. I can't remember a time on council where we've been asked to approve changes in budget to benefit to this extent in terms of cost, but millions of dollars outside of our budget.
The ones I guess I'm a little bit concerned about the fabric ones, just because I know that they weren't in the original budget, and I would feel more comfortable removing those until we have the board in place, because I think additional changes to fabric budget needs to be some oversight on that for exactly these reasons, so that you don't have a lot of expenses sort of turning up in lists to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars without us really having a good option to, I guess, examine that, which is why I've always a good idea, so that this stuff doesn't happen. There's also a lot of other things in there that I think probably require some investigation. And I would feel more comfortable having a workshop on this, so that we could actually, in fact, go through line by line and try and understand what this is, because I'm not debating the fact that staff have put a huge amount of work into these, they have, but as an elected body, we are responsible for the council's financial operations, and I'm not comfortable with this. I feel like I need more information. It would be fantastic, but I feel like I need the opportunity to understand this a little bit more. So I'm not supporting the motion in its current form. If the motion doesn't get up, I will be requesting a deferral ahead of a workshop so we can talk about some of these issues. Thank you. Councillor Dobby, would you like to speak?
Pardon me, ask a question. Mm-hmm. Is it possible for the council to endorse this motion and then have a subsequent workshop on the $2.218 million expenditure, then following that, the council should wish they could, a member could bring a motion to the council discontinuing funding for particular projects, and then that would be reflected at a subsequent budget review.
I'll throw that under the CEO, I think. Yeah,
through you, the mayor. Yes, we can do that. There's a couple of ways to do it. You defer this item to the 10th of December and hold a workshop, or do it as you've suggested, endorse it tonight, and with a caveat to bring it back to a workshop, and then we can review it at a future budget review session.
Thank you for that. Some of the programs and projects that are incorporated into that proposed $2.218 million, they, as Councillor Daniel alluded to, are dependent on state, federal funding. Are some of those projects time critical that if we don't act sooner, that we may miss out altogether if we haven't demonstrated to the state or federal government that we've actually committed funds for these projects, so as we've got some skin in the game, so to speak.
Who would like to take that under the order?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Through you, yes, there are some that are time critical. There are some that we've got, in effect, commitments to already in projects have finished, and there are some tidy up or some correction numbers here to reflect what has occurred. So some of them are time critical, not all of them. There are some that are discretionary. If council want to go through an exercise of picking out certain projects, there are some that you could not do, but for example, the Mile Road Hall, we had to act as a matter of urgency, and the CEO and I discussed that one at length. So we acted to get that all in place so they could be irrigated in the open for cricket season, and that work has been completed in the campaign books. So there are some of the time critical. Yeah.
Councillor Daniel,
do you
have a question?
Just, I guess, whether you would accept the variation of point three. That would just say that a workshop be held regarding increased capital expenditure and was as part of the BLM. Would that be a variation or an
So we just need to take leave of the second.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And leave of the meeting.
And put a date on.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll just get the wording right before I go to that. So, did a workshop be held?
The workshop be held regarding the increased capital expenditure endorsed as part of the budget we do on. I'll look at the administration for that, but before budget review too.
Want me to make those against? Okay. So that's the second is happy with the variation. Okay. Would anyone like to debate the item that happened already? Council Munch.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yeah, look, I just wanted to endorse some of the changes that are actually in that capital budget. As Councillor Dannon mentioned before, there's significant court resurfacing, which I believe is subject to grant funding. There's the Mylor Oval Bore renewal. I've spoken to the committee of the Oval, and it was certainly something that was causing them lots of angst. And I thank the administration for prioritising the replacement of that bore. Our sports grounds are one of the jewels in the crown of what we have in the Adelaide Hills, and I think it's really important we make sure that they're properly irrigated. And another one in here which I noticed as well is Shannon Road and Bridgewater footpath. That's been put back in Chisholm Lane. So the people on Shannon Road have been talking to me and others about this for a very, very long time. I hate to see that not happen. And there are other ones who I think have strong priorities as well. So I commend the motion. Just make one more comment. I do believe we need some of the scrutiny in this. So I do endorse the concept of having a workshop to go through it one by one.
Okay.
Would Ryan,
you like to speak to
the
item?
Yes, I would thank you, Deputy Mayor. I thank the comments of other elected members and I agree with Councillor Munch. Doubtless there are a number of projects here that have merit and need to be addressed quickly. It goes without saying, and I agree with Councillor Daniel's comments that indeed these maps do need to be looked into at depth in order to tease it out. I guess what I'm comfortable with is a package of 2.2 million with a number of items that are incontrovertibly with merit and a whole lot of other stuff that we haven't managed to scrutinise. Without any comment on the way staff have managed it, because the staff, of course, do an excellent job. It is our role to scrutinise, and we're not doing our job if we're not scrutinising these matters. And the significant increase in capital expenditure without the opportunity to work through it and have the time to apply our minds to it, I think is putting us in a position to rubber stamp matters like that. And I don't think this chamber should be treated as a rubber stamp. So I'm not sure which way I'll vote yet, because I wish to express my displeasure. That's all I have to say.
I noticed that the motion refers to capital, but I'm picking up on Councillor Hunt's comment about fabric. There's $400,000 of capital. Find that will be picked up into the view. It was roads, 100,000 buildings, 275,000, and changing places to 25,000 400 capital. And that in the operating, there's another page 351, there's another 13,000 for advertising and 33,000 for electricity. And the question I put to the administration is that I didn't explain it.
phrase very clearly. Was that those figures that were in addition to those we adopted in the business plan back in June or something like that? Business plan we adopted when the budget was being prepared. And I didn't phrase my question very clearly. So, in addition to what's up there, I will want to know, I'm sure Council Parliament would want to know, the plan that we adopted, is that being followed? And if it's not, will we be advised of how we're being followed? So I'm happy to support this, but I'll somehow really get sneak that into the workshop by what I need.
Okay,
thank you, Deputy Mayor. Keep it fairly brief because I know we've talked about this a lot. They certainly do take a lot of what Councillor Grant's highlighted around our responsibility in curtailing some of our fiscal decisions, especially in light of some recent difficulties that have sort of been brought to the forefront. But I get a sense it is the aspiration of the council to start to be more involved in that. I think there was some sentiment of regret of maybe some limited involvement previously, and I think we're sort of all learning some lessons at the moment. What this motion at the moment does is, I think, point three was born out of this process. We've got a budget review one. We've had people that have read through their papers. They've got some concerns. And they're wanting to do something about it, which is where the workshop comes into play. Because I think there's not that rubber stamping line letting go through the keeper is going, let's not throw the baby out of the bathwater, stop and take pause. And yes, I think it's being brought to the forefront, but there's some nitpicking and some effort we're going to have to put in on a line by line basis. So I think I have some faith and confidence in the fact that there is sounding like some strong support, especially from the workshop perspective, to go, we can't just keep pushing this up through as a chamber. We've got to be more invested in understanding this and make possibly some really hard decisions. Because you don't have a workshop on this with the conversation we've had today to go and greenlight things. There's going to be some tough conversations. So I'm in support of this motion because I think it does captured the intent and perfectly what Councillor Grant's been speaking to, but it doesn't put things at risk that are already in tow. I think that wouldn't reflect particularly well on us. I think it would be a little too knee-jerky at this point. So, in the motion.
Thank you. Anyone who hasn't spoken like to speak? Okay, we're back to the mover, Councillor Nandon.
I do acknowledge and understand some of the concerns raised, but also, like Councillor Chia just reiterated, that the workshop goes a long way to addressing that. And the only other point I'd make is I disagree with the notion Councillor Grant put forward about rubber stamping. I don't think we've ever been that kind of chamber, Councillor Grant, and I don't think it will be before.
Thank you. So, move to the vote. All those in favour? Against? That's carried. Okay, so moving on to item 13, we have no information items tonight. We do have some correspondence from the meeting from Regional Development Australia, Allegra Spurio, Blue Island Annual Report 23-24. Would someone like to move something? Councillor Chita?
Yeah,
Yes,
thank you, Judy, Deputy Mayor. I was wanting to know when report from the community forum that was held up at the Summit Community Centre. I asked this back in August about when when the report would be finalised. The community, Woodford Residents Association, is still asking for it.
Ms. Charlton, would you like to take that one?
Really, Deputy Mayor. My apologies, I thought that they have been circulated, but it's fine, so we can catch that next week.
It has been finalised and they've received it.
Administration's any other questions about notice? Okay, motions without notice. No, okay. So we'll move on to report. Has anyone got anything they want to add or speak to with regard to council member reports? No? Okay, we'll move on to we don't have any reports from people as external organisations or representatives unless someone wants to add something now. CEO, would you like to give us a report?
Sure, thank you. Thank you for being Deputy Mayor. Just continuing on what I was talking about earlier with the GRFMA, with the CEOs, with most of the CEOs that I've met with so far, have agreed that we should, as CEO group, have just a workshop for the CEOs to think about our position now and what the member councils and what the association is defining itself at the moment and what it might be in the future. So once I've done that, I will come back to council and workshop the item as well, because I feel that there's two components to the association: what it achieves currently and what it could possibly achieve in the future. Look, some of the other work, we're continuing to do our work around updating our policies in governance, in particular some of the SAGSA improvement phases. And on a bit more of a lighter note, we have been working on end of the year recognition and celebrations, and we're looking at a new staff meeting, which elected members will be invited to. And also some sort of celebration of this chamber at the next council meeting, and I'll give you invites as those develop in June weeks. That's all at this point. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, so moving on to reports of committees, we do have the minutes of the council assessment panel from the 13th of November. Would somebody like to move something on the motion to? Councillor Lunch, as printed, would you like to speak? Would anyone like to say anything, Councillor Cheetah?
Yeah.
Would anyone like to debate the item? No, all those in favour? Carrying unanimously. And we also have minutes from the 18th of November for the Audit Committee. Would someone like to move something? Councillor Herman, would you like to move? And you'll speak. Yeah, who is printing?
Maybe I've printed that couple of titles. Minutes are ready to read. There's a sort of limited report in there as well, but one that I'd like to draw your attention, which I think Graham said will be coming forward to the December meeting. How important the December meeting is that with leadership of the Audit Committee. There are revised terms of reference which the committee endorsed except for the clause 45789, which deals with the membership of the committee. And in particular, the deciding member being an independent member rather than a council officer, a council representative. I am that council representative. The committee declined to deal with it because of conflicts of interest. They were unable to deal with it. So that was sent to the chamber on the 10th of December.
You're through the Deputy Mayor. It's likely to come in the January meeting.
No, sorry, it's coming in the December. There's no urgency for it because their terms expire in November. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all I'd say. Councillor Lunch.
Look, I'm happy to second, but I also have a question regarding that. So there's a proposed change to the terms of reference of the Audit Committee to make the presiding member an independent person. And where did that come from? Was that a recommendation?
So I can probably answer that. Yeah, so there was a recommendation from the administration. I had a review of the terms of reference that went to audit committee. Audit committee determined that clauses 439 were conflict of interest for the committee themselves to consider, so they could be proposed. And
there
you go. Did you want to add?
Yes, and just to remind councillors, it was also a recommendation of the order to the general as well to appoint an independent chair.
Okay, well, would you like to second that, Councillor Mutchin?
Yeah.
Would you like to speak? No, Councillor Osterstock?
Just thank you. Just following on from that. What was the genesis of the Auditor General's recommendation? Where did that come from? What prompted him to make that recommendation to our council specifically?
You got it there.
Yes, through you, Deputy Mayor. It was when we reported our financial positions to the Auditor General, and in their response back, and they, in their correspondence, they recommend to all councils that the chairs generally should be independent, not one independent.
Thank you. And does the Auditor General justify that in some way? What's the thought process?
Yeah, look, I can, their exact thought process is, I can understand, but it was just a recommendation as part of the correspondence.
With no supporting evidence.
Yeah. We can potentially debate that when that comes back. Quite soon.
Yeah, and look, we can provide, ask that question and provide that information when it does come to the chamber generally.
Councillor Fasano, yeah, thank you. And through you, Deputy Mayor, I recall asking this question to Mr. Lewis when the. Can you just recall approximately when we had that in our papers or in our agenda? Because I asked this exact question because it was in the Auditor General's letter to us and the justification was put in there as well.
And I
would guess it was September, but I'll need to check. And I think there was two elements. As one is there's a recommendation from the LGA, and that took effect in the template in terms of reference. And the Auditor General was emphasizing that that was the LGA's recommendation. From that's my recollection of it, but I would need to check it with you.
Right, does anyone else want to speak to the item? Okay, Councillor Hillman, would you like to write a reply? Okay, we'll go to the vote. All those in favour? Carried unanimous. So we have no reports from the COPRP or the Boundary Chain Committee. So we will be moving on to confidential items, which unfortunately means for our public we will have to ask you to leave if you are heading into question. Thank you very much for coming and attending our meeting tonight.
Thank you.
Okay. So we see that since then. Next part of the resolution. And we have also extended the meeting to that. Okay, would somebody like to move something in relation to the device? Councillor Grant has supplied.
I'd like to move something. Yes, as supplied with a couple of minor details, part 2E. Part 3E. I just want to put a date there. By the 10th of December 2024 to make it consistent with other matters, and I'll welcome advice if there's a reason not to have a date. And because of that, we just need to add the E in part 4B, at which the deputy mayor reports back to council. So, yeah, so there, parts 3C, comma E, comma G and J. Does that make sense? So because there's a date required by which it must be done, that also needs to be reported back for the that will my desire.
Just for my benefit, can we see what 3D is again? Oh, okay. Would you like to speak tonight? Just to remind you that we are public.
Yeah, thank you. My comments are written with that in mind. There's a lot to absorb here, but I think it's important to start with the lens that these proposed actions are not punitive. These are actions to try and protect council from damage from behaviour that we have found breached our behavioural standards, okay? So these are specifically to protect the council, the organisation, and of course, by nature, the ratepayers from damaging behaviour by the mayor. So apply that lens to everything here. And some of these are with our independent report has established bullying, not abiding by the rule of law, not accepting the will of the chamber, and does not seem to understand her role as the mayor and does not accept that she needs to change. So A was exclusion of the mayor from the admin building. That's not to ostracise the mayor, it's to prevent the mayor intervening in administrative matters that she should not as an elected member. It doesn't prevent her performing her duties, but this is to prevent her performing actions that she's been doing that are wrong. So it's not punitive. And I hope the mayor doesn't see it as that. It's simply to change it so that more meddling can't be done. And that's because under the Act, section 62.4C, I'll quote, a member of council must not direct or seek to influence an employee of the council in the exercise or performance of a power or function delegated to or performed by the employee. Elected members must not do it. We must not do it. The mayor has been guilty of doing it. And so we're trying to prevent that. We move the mayor from the heart of the organisation to closer to the elected, to the ratepayers. And that's appropriate. But essentially, I feel we can't rely on the mayor to act on council's behalf. That's why we're stating we don't have confidence in the mayor to continue in her role. We would respectfully ask her to resign and for her own well-being. But failing that, we're asking the mayor to do these other things and requiring her to do any of those things. And hopefully at the end of it, it will restore council to normal function and get us going correctly. And we've had a lot of difficulties after for large problems because of the mayor's behaviour. And I believe these will go a long way to rectifying it. The mayor will have some difficult decisions in front of her, and I wish her the best. But all we can do is take actions to protect the council and try and move forward and hopefully put legal proceedings behind us. I don't think I have much to add to that. I might reserve it for my reply, but we're just trying to fix the situation, but we have one opportunity to do it. We have to be strong. And I commend this motion to the chamber.
Thank you. Is there a seconder?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'll second this motion. Clearly what the council and the elected body have experienced over the last 12 months, given the mayor's behaviour, as highlighted in the report that we've received, the mayor's position is untenable. Hence the motion as moved by Councillor Grant, not only censures the mayor, but is a vote of no confidence in her capacity to continue as mayor and for the remainder of the council term. The mayor's leadership role is non-existent at this point in time and has been so for quite some time. Hence the motion is calling on the mayor as a result of that no confidence resolution to resign by a certain date. Many of the sanctions that have been moved by Councillor Grant, I note, are already contained in the inquiry report that we received as a result of the mayor's inappropriate behaviour. There are some other matters that Councillor Grant has put in, and rightly so, in an effort to restore the functionality of Adelaide Hills Council and restore a working relationship with not only elected members, but staff, which has been extremely strained over the last 12 months. The apologies are contained in the report. The training, the program of training and education as articulated in the motion is contained in the report. And I think it's important that given if the council resolves that they have no confidence in the mayor, to fulfill the functions of the mayor, that all those functions and duties and responsibilities that need to be performed by the deputy mayor and or the deputy mayor's delegate, that's only appropriate if we move a no confidence motion and that gets up in this chamber. It's appropriate that the mayor is removed from any Section 41 committees. The council has already seen fit to remove the mayor from the CEO performance panel. And equally, there is a recommendation that the council request the mayor repay the council for the cost of this investigation report. That is only appropriate. We have learnt that the costs are excessive and that a part of that legal costs have been attributed to the management and of this matter in dealing with the mayor and the mayor's solicitors. It is important that any accusation of a denial of natural justice, a denial of procedural fairness, that is without any foundation whatsoever. That has clearly been articulated in the report and articulated once again by the legal advice that we've received. There is no suggestion, no credible suggestion of a denial of natural justice or procedural fairness in the way that this matter has been brought to the council tonight. Equally, if the council resolves a vote of no confidence in the mayor, that we inform federal and state representatives of that fact and that any future correspondence is directed to the deputy mayor and or CEO.
You've got 1 minute remaining.
Equally, any invitation or communication received by any state or federal government body or community group for that matter is immediately forwarded to the CEO and or the deputy mayor for their attendance and action. And equally, given the gravity of the report that we've considered and the mayor's behaviour that's been articulated in the reports that we've considered, that this council endorses the fact that the mayor's office has been moved from the Stirling administration office area to the Coventry Library, and one only has to reflect on the report for that recommendation to be justified.
The time is up. You can wrap up.
I commend the motion to the chamber.
Thank you. Who else would like to speak to you? Councillor Daniels.
Thanks, Sam. Yeah, I'm sure we'd all prefer that an item like this doesn't exist. However, it does. And with that in mind, we need to ensure we deal with it appropriately and objectively. The role of mayor is of critical importance to our organisation. They are the key link between the administration, the elected body and the community. Their job is to provide leadership and bring these stakeholders together, in particular the administration and us, so that we can work effectively for the betterment of our community. The Act explicitly states the responsibility of the mayor is to lead the promotion of positive and constructive working relationships. The process and procedures followed, as articulated by Councillor Osterstock regarding this complaint and investigation process, has had the highest integrity, it's ensured procedural fairness to all parties involved, including the mayor. This has resulted in an objective and independent investigation report, which was put before us tonight. The findings before us are evidence-based, and they include a series of breaches of 8 separate standards, which include bullying of employees. And I won't go through all the standards which have been breached, as they do speak for themselves, but I do want to talk about the importance of relationships. Irrespective of who is the mayor, irrespective of the council they are the mayor for, it is essential that mayors provide positive and constructive relationships with key stakeholders. Relationships build trust, respect, collaboration and cooperation. Mayors breach the standards associated with these types of relationships, both with respect to us as council members and the council's employees. As an example, this included covertly recording an informal conversation with multiple elected members. The mayor has not, as evidenced in the report, been the leader we expect and is required according to the behavioural standards and the Act. Her behaviour is not aligned with the values of this elected body and our organisation. And for these reasons, I don't have confidence in the mayor and the capacity to continue in the role and undertaking the duties and responsibilities of such an important role, which ensures the best interests of our chamber, our organisation and our community are represented. The motion does call attention to the mayor and request she resign, and this is appropriate due to the nature of the breaches and also the mayor's refusal to acknowledge these failings of her conduct in the role. I do note she still has the choice to address the requirements within the motion, which would negate some of these impacts which have been felt, for example, through training. At a time when we have recently endorsed our new strategic plan and as we navigate important issues and big issues, we need a man who is dedicated to undertaking the role with the highest integrity and in a manner that aligns with the standards of the Act. Out of all of this, I feel most for our community. While I and possibly all of you, although I will not speak on your behalf, have been affected by the mayor's actions in different ways, I feel it is our community who has lost out more than anyone. The behaviour in these breaches has undoubtedly had a negative impact on how our organisation operates and our ability for us to effectively deliver services for that incredible community which we represent, and we need to be able to respond to their needs. This is where our focus needs to be, and for that to be achieved, we need a man who will provide leadership, build respectful relationships and align their behaviour to the expectations set by the standards and the legislation. I commend the motion.
Thank you. Who else would like to speak? Councillor Farthing.
Thank you. I'll just speak briefly. I know it's a difficult process for all of us, and I don't think any of us are happy to see this motion here. But I think, just to reiterate the comments I made previously, this has been an incredibly stressful time for many of us on the council over this period. And I endorse what Councillor Daniels has just outlined, but I think we all deserve now to be able to focus on the things that we're here to do, which is to deliver our strategic plan for the council, to work with our communities, to
help them, I guess, you know, present things that they would like to council and work really hard to have them delivered and you know, have this past us so that we can all work together with someone who is going to sort of reflect our values, I think. In general, we're a fairly cohesive council and we share a lot of values. And I think it's really important that we have someone who leads us who understands that they have responsibilities and that they need to undertake them. So, rambling, I'll just commend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. That was a nice speak on the motion. Councillor Boyd.
Yeah. Just a question. If I move a form of motion to adjourn the item and it fails, can I speak?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'd like to move a formal motion to adjourn the motion as there has not been enough time to digest the motion as Councillor Grant's motion only came through at 4:00 and there was no alternative motion. So we need the time to contemplate not only the motion but the legislation in depth. So I request that we adjourn the motion until December 10 meeting with the possibility of a workshop on this next week before it goes back to council.
Okay, so this is a formal motion. I need to speak a seconder. Councillor Pascali. Now there's no debate on this item, so I move straight to the vote. All those in favour? All those against? And the motion is lost. Councillor Pascali, you'd like to speak?
Yes, I'd like to speak to this motion. I think I understand, I've read the recommendations, I've read that report, and I've digested this motion, and I think that there is. I don't think that there is a synergy between the two. I think we are taking some elements of this to an extreme. And while it may be important for us to talk about the reputational damage and the tarnish that we experienced as a community, as a council, I think what we need to possibly do is take a step back and look at public perception. So what we have here is quite a detailed motion which gives a lot of instructions to our mayor, which in some ways sets her up to fail by some of the things that we're asking her to do there. But when you look at this with a gendered lens, this isn't necessarily a mayor who's breached all of these conditions. A lot of women in our community won't read all of this. They won't read the fine print. They'll just read the media. And they'll go, there's another woman in leadership who's been thrown under the bus and crucified. That is a public perception. And I would just like to point out that we've had three men speak so far on this motion for a total of 13 minutes and 38, and one woman speak for 1 minute and 7 seconds. So that says to me, when you look at the facts, this has to have a gendered lens on it, and I'm so sad that what we did as a council last week in a workshop, what we were commended for, we had to get to this point. We had to get to the point that a female leader in our community is being treated like this. Yes, there were breaches, and yes, there were ways of resolving it, but how did we get to this point? But we all know women in local government are actually at a disadvantage. The data is out there. And I just would like to say that I find this extremely difficult to watch and be a part of. And I think that I was actually thinking today of that young girl that came in and gave a deputation for a footpath near her school. And she said she wanted to get into politics. And she said she wanted to be a leader in her community. If she saw what is happening now, I would have to say to her, sweetheart, I don't think it's going to get any better. Because I have watched a female leader go through a horrendous amount of distress to get to this point. Yes, I agree. There was a report. I said that there were sanctions. But some of these sanctions are actually too severe. And, you know, as a woman, I just can't endorse that.
I'm just going to pass on the dinner who has a comment you'd like to make. Thank you, Councillor Pascali, for your comments. What I just would
caution council in relation to making this decision is to ensure that what it considers are relevant considerations as for the purpose of sanctioning the mayor taking action. Gender is not a relevant consideration. It was not found to be relevant in the report and the findings, and I would suggest that it is not relevant. And in fact, taking into consideration irrelevant factors when making decisions taints the decision.
Can I respond to that? Sorry, I do have to make this break. We've already spoken.
No, I just up there on the formal motion it says move Councillor Boyd, second Councillor Park, and it wasn't me, it was Councillor Pascal.
Was Councillor Pascal.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Herman. You'd like to
say my comments. I don't think I'll join the debate, but just we give it to you. But I do have a question about you guys. You'd like to invite legal advice on the previous speaker. Suggested that the motion is not commensurate with the breaches. What's your opinion on that? If they not, apparently doesn't fit.
So, thank you, Councillor Hillman. My view is that the proposed motion and the sanction are commensurate. That is ultimately a matter of the council, but I urge you to consider the seriousness of some of the breaches and the behaviour that the investigation found for the purposes of assessing the penetration.
Thank you.
Sanction.
I'm just wondering, can I have to put a variation on this? So, it's a bit drastic, but I think that this is really, really heavy.
Sorry, we can't debate. We just need to find out what your variation
is. And my variation is to remove 3B, C, H, J, and L.
I think that would be considered an amendment rather than a variation.
Okay, can I do an amendment?
Yes, you can. Yes, so to remove
3B, 3C, 3H, 3J, and 3L.
Is the point of order, is that the amendment or is it more than the amendment? Can you draw on that?
I need to have a look at the motion.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would consider that a substantial alteration of the motion and an amendment.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry. Okay, would anyone like to speak now and yet spoken to the motion? And we go back to the room, Councillor Grant.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I thank members for their contributions. It's been been a good debate. I just want to touch on a few things that have been said, and I thank everyone for their contributions. But I think Councillor Osterstock made excellent points about this motion being to restore functionality to the council. It is with a heavy heart we remove roles and responsibilities from the mayor. But we do it because she cannot perform them adequately or at all. And the mayor's lack of leadership and behaviours cost the organisation significantly in staff, in legal costs, time wasted, and this chamber being distracted from important issues and importantly lost to the organisation's reputation. We have to go about fixing them, and this is a good start. Councillor Daniel stated we must deal with this impartially and fairly, and that we must. All of this is evidence-based. It's not gender-based. And Councillor Pascali didn't mention the gender of the writer of the report, our head of governance or the deputy mayor in this meeting.
important figures who are part of the work being done here. I just think it's, I think it's, to label a matter of the rule of law as a gender issue is really not up to standard. We have to make evidence-based decisions, and that's what we're doing here tonight. And the evidence found that the leader, the mayor, is not the leader we expect, and it's not addressing the challenges we face. The suggestion that this motion is extreme and setting the mayor up to fail, I think, is just completely wrong. The mayor could easily comply with what we've demanded. There's elements of this of which you could ignore, and when we can only request, but it doesn't set her up to fail. And if there's any public perception, I think inflammatory comments are the ones that are going to create public perceptions. But the public perception we're creating here is of rule-based order and decisions made on evidence. Just to emphasise again, the mayor refused every opportunity given to her to resolve this matter. She refused every one of them. And I wonder what would be said if the genders were reversed of a male bullying a female in the same situation. The mayor was paid a wage to do a job, and she didn't do that job. So I commend the motion to the chamber.
Thank you. We'll go to the vote. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried. Okay, thank you, everybody. In the interest of time, I'm going to move on. Question?
Yes, question. Is it possible, are there the remaining three items on the agenda, are they critical that they need to be dealt with tonight, or could they be adjourned to the 10th of...
It's my understanding that they're quite time critical given that but we can move through them. Okay, I'd like to move up this confidentiality. Thanks. All those in favour? Let's just go and pop the carry lamp. Thank you, Ms. Annette.